Welcome to the Business of Dairy podcast. I'm your host, Sheena Carter. My guest this episode is Greg Kuckel, Senior Insights Manager at Rural Bank, who spoke recently at the Raising the Roof conference in the Hunter Valley of New South Wales about farm loans, in particular for infrastructure loans related to cow housing facilities. Greg and I had such a good discussion that we've turned this into a two-part series. This first episode covers the general principles and considerations when approaching banks for finance, what you need to do, information you need to provide, what banks are looking for from you and in you, and the types of loans available. In the next episode, we move into financing large infrastructure projects on farm. So remember to tune in next month for part two. Welcome to the podcast, Greg. It is great to have you as my guest today, having spent some time with you at the Raising the Roof conference in the Hunter Valley recently, where we were on a panel together. Could you just give our listeners some insights into yourself, your background and your role with Rural Bank?
Yeah, g'day all. I'm at present a senior industry insights manager for Rural Bank, and I'm based in Swan Hill in northwest Victoria, and I've lived here for a number of years. My background, I grew up on a dairy farm in South Australia, so I've always had a dairy farming background and always been obviously involved from a banking perspective right through my whole career. Worked for Rural Finance, which is a Victorian government-owned bank, for the first 15 years, and then we were bought by the Bendigo Bank, and then obviously come Rural Bank after that. So essentially with the one career over 26 or so years, all through Western Victoria. So I've worked in Warrnambool, Swan Hill and Mildura. So yeah, had a fair cross-section of most agriculture industries, but certainly pretty well the dairy industry all the way through my life.
Yeah, excellent. That's great to hear. So you'll understand sort of farming, a dairy farming perspective, which I think is often a challenge in the big game of the finance world these days. It's always good to have someone that you can engage with who understands what you're dealing with.
Yeah, no, exactly. And look, it's the dairy industry, I think of what it's gone through in my time, and then I start talking to my dad, who's now, 82, 83, and started milking cows, left school when he was 14 and started milking cows from there, and where it's got to today and where it's going to go to. It's great to see such a progressive industry over those times and what's improvements we've seen, and never underestimate a farmer's ability to grow and adapt over time and adjust to things. So, it's been great to you know, be involved, but also watch it from the sidelines as well, from a banking perspective.
Yeah, yeah. And I guess you're one of that, unique breed that's been in the same job, same role for a prolonged period of time. So you've got lots of experience up your sleeve.
Yeah, it's a bit unusual to find someone that's been in the same, haven't certainly had the same job for the whole time, but with the same organisation, essentially. Yeah, it's a bit unusual, that's for sure. So you rack up a good lot of long service leave, which is good.
Yes.
So there is some positives.
So Rural Bank, can you just explain a bit about Rural Bank? It's part of Bendigo Bank?
Yeah, so Rural Bank is the agribusiness banking arm of the Bendigo Bank. So obviously everybody would know the Bendigo Bank. And from that perspective, we realised that agricultural lending and lending to agribusiness is very different to commercial lending and retail lending. And you need the right people and the right skills and knowledge to be able to deal in those industries. So yeah, that's certainly the way it operates. And we've got, obviously, apart from our normal lending activity, we've got an insights department that provides a lot of reports that are open to the public for, you don't need to be a customer to be able to access it. A lot of industry reports, obviously there's dairy industry reports, a lot of Outlook reports, and there's probably the one that sort of gets seen and heard a lot is the Rural Bank Farm Values Index report, which now comes out every 6 months. Mm-hmm. And that's been going for a number of years for people to be able to track what farmland values have done over the last, I think we're up to now 26 or 27 years of data. So that's a really interesting report to watch, and a couple of podcasts as well. So there's some really good information that's open to anybody on our website, which is really informative.
Yep, and I'll admit I subscribe to your insights report, and it's good not only just from a dairy perspective, but just to look across other industries as well. What's going on in the grains industries and things like that.
Exactly. I think obviously a lot of industries cross over, and, as you said, the grains industry is a prime example where there's that cross section between dairy and grains. The two of them intertwine a lot, and you've got to have a good understanding of what's going on the other side of the fence to know what the impact's going to be from buying in fodder and so forth. So, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, finance. I think, we're going to cover quite a bit in this podcast on approaching the bank, but can you just give the listeners some general principles when they're approaching a bank for finance? What are some things to consider for general loans?
Yeah, for general loans, I think open and honest conversations from both sides is probably paramount. I think you've got to be really comfortable with who you're dealing with, I'm not going to be talking about Royal Bank. I'm talking about banking in general. But just be comfortable with who you're dealing with, the organisation you're dealing with. Do they, you know, not all bank staff are going to know your particular farming operation inside and out and accept that. But, you know, do they understand the industry? And you're going to have to help them a bit to understand how your operation particularly works. And that's fine. But yeah, certainly be prepared. So, you know, know your information. You know, at the end of the day, the bank is making, firstly, an assessment on you before they even make an assessment on your financials. So, you know, you don't have to turn up in a suit or anything like that, ridiculous, but turn up in a, you know, organised, you know what you're there for, and expect the bank to ask you some, not tough questions, but just good logical questions. You know, the first question is usually why, and be prepared for it because they're going to ask you that question. So, yeah, just put a bit of thought into how you're going to be prepared, what information you're going to have with you. If you don't know the answer, that's fine, but, you know, how are you going to get that answer for them and so forth? So, you know, most banks, if I can explain it this way, the titles of people that work in banks are called relationship managers, and some people go, well, that's a strange terminology, but it is actually a relationship between a bank and the farmer, and that's the paramount bit. So building that relationship first before you even get into the financials and the money side of it.
Yeah, which might surprise some people. I think in any engagement with suppliers, whether that's, you know, we've spoken about grains or whatever, you know, commodities, and obviously, you know, finance, you as a farmer, you're approaching a bank to lend you money, their money you want, you're asking them for, which ultimately you're going to have to pay back. So you need to be credible and, I guess, judged as someone that has the capacity to do that.
Exactly. And it's not a one-off transaction. It's an ongoing relationship. Like, you can always change bank in 5 years' time, but you're always going to, if you've got debt, you've always got a bank that's an equity holder in your business. So it's not like going and buying a can of Coke or a coffee down the road. You do the transaction, you walk away, and that's it. It's, you know, you've got someone with a stake in your business long term. So both sides need to be comfortable with that relationship going forward because, you know, in 5 years' time, things might not be going as well and you need to get through a few sticky scenarios or there's a, you know, family issues and all those sort of things we all see in farming that comes along and you know, we all got to be comfortable that both sides can handle those situations when it comes along because it is an ongoing relationship.
Yep, it's a complex game, farming. There's always something around the corner.
Exactly.
Expected or unexpected. Exactly. Okay, now when approaching a bank, there's obviously different types of loans that are available. Could you touch on some of them?
Yeah, certainly can. Your stock standard ones, overdrafts are the logical ones. So they're the most common what you'd see. So they're to essentially cover your working capital requirements during those times of the year when you've got usually a reduction in income and an increase in expenses. And the expectation from those type of facilities is that, you know, you'll clear them for a reasonable period of the time, but they're there for when you need it. They'll usually come at a higher rate because they're transactional. Your term loan lending, so that's more related to, you know, land purchases and those type of things. And it's interesting, you can have them on a P&I basis, or principal interest repayment or interest only. And that'll vary depending on what the banks offer. Some banks offer interest only and that's it. Some offer P&I and they want P&I. And then you've got clients as well who've got different opinions on interest only and P&I. And there is, I suppose, if I explain that one, there's from a purely economics point of view, you can sit there and make the argument around interest only to say, well, look, if I can make a better return from my farming business by reinvesting as opposed to paying my debt back, the more than what the interest rate I'm paying, then it makes more sense to me just keep investing and keep my debt where it is. You know, the reverse argument to that also is that, you know, if you want to build equity in your business, we've got to pay debt back. And sometimes a bank will actually essentially say one of the conditions is we want you to be paying back because you're outside of a preferred parameter or something like that. We need to get some equity back in your business. The other aspect to it, which actually probably is overrides it more than anything, is can you sleep at night? So, you know, some people can't sleep at night knowing, well, I'm still going to have the same debt that I got today in 20 years' time, and other people can. So, you know, chipping away at a bit of debt all the time can actually help people sleep at night because I know I can see my debt going down. So that's your term loans. Equipment finance, that's certainly one that's, you know, obviously fairly stock standard what we see, but you're starting to see now I suppose, a lot more options in, you know, herd monitoring systems, cow collars and all those sort of things come under, you know, even funding new dairies. Obviously, sometimes some of the equipment inside and vets and, you know, obviously vets have always been financed that way, but they're shorter terms, 4 or 5 years, but you can put balloons on the end and then pay them out over a longer period of time from there. So they're probably the three main ones you'd sort of see from a general day-to-day banking perspective.
Okay. And those equipment loans are generally principal and interest?
Yeah, they are, because from a bank's point of view, we're funding a depreciating asset. Mm. So we've got to see that debt repaid. And the term of that will be determined by, there's some industry standards about how quickly things depreciate. So, you know, what's the resale value of a herd monitoring system with cow collars? I suspect isn't that great, but a tractor's pretty good in 5 years' time. So that can influence where a bank will say, oh, look, we'll do this over 7 years, or we'll put a 30% balloon on the end and you can do it. You know, we'll sort that out afterwards, to others where, no, it's 5 years and that's it. So it's really related to the depreciation, or the how quickly that asset would depreciate and its resale value at that point in time.
Okay. Can you explain to the listeners the term balloon? What is a balloon payment?
Yep. So a balloon payment is essentially, so you might say, well, look, I want to finance a piece of equipment. Most banks will lend 100% of the value of the equipment, but a balloon payment is a lump sum payment that is due at the end. So if I keep it really simple, if you borrow $100,000 and you say, I want a 30% balloon on the end, and it's going to be over a 5-year term, you'll pay $70,000 off over 5 years. And at the end of that 5 years, you will have a $30,000 balloon payment. And that can either be paid out in cash, so you can actually basically just pay it out and it's out of the way. The other way that you often see is people will change over that piece of machinery. So if it's something that you've got part of your maintenance schedule is, all right, well, I change that machine over every 5 years no matter what. Mm-hmm. Then essentially that gets paid out by the trade-in or the changeover when you buy the new machine. Or the other way, if it's, as I said, if it's a machine that does depreciate over a long period of time and has some good value, the bank will often say, look, we'll just refinance that balloon over another 2 years or something like that, and you just pay it off over that period of time and it's gone. So, but the advantage of a balloon is it reduces your commitments up front for that first 4 or 5 years. So you're not, you know, you're not trying to pay off what could be quite a sizable debt in a very short period of time. So it just helps from a cash flow perspective.
Excellent. Great. Thanks, Greg. Okay, so now let's start with me. I'm a farmer. I'm a farm owner, and I'd like to purchase the neighbouring property. What information am I going to have to provide to you as the bank so I can try and secure the funding from you?
Yeah, so it does become a bit of a paper warfare, but the reality is that, you know, most people that are pretty well organised will have what we would need. So the basics are, we would be looking for the last 3 years' financial statements for the business. So that's pretty stock standard from that. So that just gives us a guide of what your income levels have been, your cost of production and so forth, and at the end of the day, what the level of profitability that's within your business as it stands now. We would be looking for milk statements for the last for that same period of time as well. And so just your end of June one. So that gives us your production level on a yearly basis. And we'd ask, well, how many cows were you milking during that period of time? So we can work out your per cow production as well. We'd ask for an updated balance sheet. So your list of assets and liabilities. And, you know, that's pretty simple. But I suppose at the end of the day, all your land, your equipment, your livestock, and this is at market value. So, you know, not necessarily if your cow got sent to the abattoirs, but what would they realistically be sold if you sold them to another dairy farmer? Fodder on hand, off-farm assets and all those type of things, liabilities. Banks will always count your liabilities at limits, if that makes sense. So from an overdraft, if you've got a $200,000 overdraft limit, but you're 100 grand, a bank will always count it at 200. So you could draw it tomorrow.
True.
It's a limit. So all liabilities, creditors, all those type of things that you've got sitting there as well. Probably get the most important one in a sec, but the second most important one is really a cash flow budget. And, you know, some people say budgets are only worth a piece of paper. How many times I've heard that one? It changes the moment you finish it, and that's probably a fair point. But there's two reasons that we look at a budget. We actually nearly look at a budget from two perspectives. One is, what does your next 12 months look like to understand what your working capital requirements are for the year ahead? So the simple question is, from that cash flow, is your overdraft as it stands today going to be sufficient for you to be able to trade for your next 12 months? So that's sort of, from that perspective, you need to be able to do that exercise. The second aspect of it is, most banks will want to understand what your business will look like going forward from a year in, year out perspective. So to use your example of the question of, you know, I'm buying a block of land next door. Well, obviously buying a block of land next door comes with more debt, but it usually comes with you milking more cows or increasing your production or saving some cost on adjustment on the young stock or something. And as a bank, we need to understand, well, what does that new state of your business look like down the track? So it's a budget, I suppose, based on averages. So, well, what, assuming a normal, an average milk price, what's average? But, you know, what's a bit of an average milk price? What's your production expected to be? What's your, you know, how are your costs going to change from this? And then have a look at that. And that's what a bank will actually really use to calculate your serviceability. They'll say, well, look, does that cash flow, that year in, year out budget you've got there, can you justify it based on your previous financials and your previous production and so forth to say, well, look, you know, you're spending X amount per hectare on fertilizer and you're picking up an X more hectares. Well, does that make sense with the fertilizer figure you've got in here? Just to use an example. And then basically say, well, look, all right, we'll now calculate your serviceability with the additional debt with this future state of what your business is going to look like. And that covers off that serviceability assessment. So that's probably the main point. And the other one I'd say is to have a business plan. And I don't mean that to come with a nice glossy folder with 55 pages in it. That's just ridiculous. Some great business plans have been on 2 pages, you know, on a piece of paper. So, you know, that going back to that thing, you know, why are you trying to do this and what's the benefit in it? And having it written down can be quite beneficial for people. So if you're going to see the bank, they've got more than one client, you know, so they're trying to get their head around, well, your business and how it operates. So, you know, it's probably an important one from that perspective. So, yeah, invest your time into a business plan and a cash flow. Your financials and balance sheets are just a statement of fact, really.
Yep. Excellent. Excellent. So then you've got all this information from me about all that, you know, stack of paper about my assets, my liabilities, my projected cash flow, et cetera. How do you then use that as a bank to decide whether I get a loan or not?
Yeah, good question. And I think the easiest way to explain it is there's a terminology within the banking world of the 5 C's of credit. And sometimes you hear 3 C's, 5 C's, but basically work on 5. And if I run through them, it's probably the easiest way because that'll help understand how a bank area looks like. So the first one and the absolute number one is the character of the people we're dealing with. So are these the type of people that we as a bank want to be associated in banking and supporting going forward? So are they trustworthy? Do they pay their bills on time? You know, do they operate within limits? You know, from an animal welfare perspective, do they look after the animals that they've got? You know, from an environmental aspect, are there any issues there? We've got a report, you know, any issues of modern slavery with employees and all those type of things. So, you know, it's the character of the person. Is this someone we want to really be dealing with? So, and that is number one. And you can have the most profitable business in the world, but if from, you know, the way they operate, then a bank will go, no, we just don't want to be involved in this. So that's number one. And that's part of that, you know, when you go back to your start, when you go and see the bank, that's part of that assessment that someone's making when they're talking to you is this someone we really want to be dealing with. So that's number one. Yep. The second one is capacity. So that is really your ability to be able to service your debt. So if you go back to the conversation we just had before about that year in, year out cash flow budget, you know, given normal circumstances, can this business support the debt and have a buffer there so that when things don't go quite well, that you've got a buffer there to go? So that's your second one. The third one is capital. So that's essentially how much capital have you got in your business, so your equity position. And, you know, there's lots of argument about how much equity someone needs in a business. And, you know, most banks will have a benchmark that they work on that'll be around a 55 or 60% benchmark for a business. You know, you can argue equity's only a number written on a piece of paper, and that's probably a fair comment. But the reason that banks look at it is how much fat have you got in your business? So when things don't quite go well, how much have you got to fall back onto? If someone's got a really strong equity position, then obviously it gives the bank some more comfort, and you'll probably get some better pricing out of your bank as well. But if you've got lower equity, that isn't necessarily a bad thing. It just means that you need to structure your business to ensure that you can make you've got to be very profitable and you're improving that equity fairly quickly so that if something does come and bite you down the track that you're prepared for it. So that's a scenario where a bank might turn around and say, we really want to see you on P&I repayments and then your debt coming down because you've got low equity. Your fourth one is collateral. So essentially the security that the bank holds. So at the end of the day, majority of banks won't do unsecured lending. It's all got to be secured. So what's the collateral? What's available? You know, obviously your most secure asset from a collateral point of view is land, but you know, land, water titles. So if you've got unbundled water, your water titles, livestock and so forth are sort of the general ones from that perspective. But the best outcome from your bank is to have a really good land base as far as your security goes, and or water. Banks look at water pretty favourably too. So yeah, look, that's probably an important one to be. At the end of the day, banks want to be comfortable that they're covered from a security point of view.
Sure. Just on the livestock, how do you value livestock given, you know, the ups and downs of the market?
With great difficulty.
Yes, right.
it's a tough one. Look, it at the end of the day, it's actually really hard to get market data on the value of dairy cows. And I've personally tried to do this on behalf of the bank to try and work out, well, what benchmark can we use for our livestock values? And you've got this scenario where all the probably most transparent, reportable public information is actually dairy cows that are going to abattoirs. And that's actually unfair on a customer to say, well, your cows that are worth $3,000 to another dairy farmer, we're going to value them at $1,200 because that's what the abattoirs are going to pay you for them. It's not a big market. It's not a transparent market, the market that goes on between dairy farmers. It's actually really hard to work that out. So
yes.
So there is a bit of an element of, well, if the baseline is the abattoir value, well, then we've probably got to find ourselves somewhere up here somewhere and go from there. So it's, you know, tricky. They talk about art and science. It's probably just as much an art and then it is a science, I think. So,
yeah.
And that's just a different, and all banks grapple with that one. Yeah.
Yes, I can imagine. No, yeah, that's a good answer though. Yeah. It depends. It's one of those it depends answers.
That's exactly right. and the fifth one is conditions. So, and that really relates to the industry that you're in. So, you know, what are some of the seasonal impacts you see within your industry? You know, where's the industry at in its cycle? What's the pricing looking like? What's your input costs looking like, and so forth? So they're the five things that a bank will really look at. And you don't have to tick all five boxes to be able to get a loan, if that makes sense. You've got to tick the character box. That's a given. You've got to tick that one. But the rest of them, if you've got lower equity but you've really got strong serviceability, then a lot of the time that'll get you over the line. If you've got strong equity, strong security, but your serviceability is a bit tight, well, a bank will probably say, well, look, we can stick you on interest-only lending and so forth, and you can continue on and go from there. You don't have to fit the box perfectly. Nah, yeah. And it's rare that someone does at the end of the day. Like most of the time, there's usually, you know, some aspect of someone's business where you go, well, it's probably not as strong as it could be, but that's just the nature of the nature of farming and agriculture. So, but that's essentially how a banker, you know, in this simplistic way, basically how a bank views an application if you put one in.
Okay, right. And so from all that, you'll come up with, yes, Sheena, we're going to lend you the money to buy the property next door. And some of that information from our five C's is used to generate a customer margin. Is that how you term it?
So through that process that we go through, you come up with a client risk rating. So that basically is a risk rating. And this is pretty standard across the banks because we're so heavily regulated in regards to the way that we have to do things. And they do it slightly differently, but it's the same process, if that makes sense. So it is ratings put on, you know, serviceability calculations, is a rating put on, you know, the security position, their equity position, the industry they're in, and you magically can put it in a box and it spits out and it'll give you a rating score. And that rating score will then drive the pricing or the margin that the bank will charge you. So if someone's a stronger rating, they'll get a lower margin, so a lower rate. Someone that might be a lesser of a risk score will get a higher margin and pay a higher rate. So, you know, it's in the farmer's best interest to present their business in the strongest position they can because that will get them the best outcome as they can. And, you know, it should also really reflect the fact that, you know, if someone improves their business over the time and that risk rating improves, that should be reflected in the pricing they receive as well. So,
good.
And most banks will review that. Most people would be on an annual review process and they should, if that's the case, then their pricing would get reviewed at that point in time as well.
That's all for today's episode of The Business of Dairy. We hope you enjoyed diving into the fascinating world of dairy farming and industry insights. As we continue to expand and evolve, we greatly appreciate your support. Our show is thriving, attracting new listeners each week, but we believe there's always room to grow and we need your help to make it happen. If you've found value in our discussions, we kindly ask you to take a moment to rate and leave a comment about the podcast on your preferred platform. Your feedback not only lets us know what you enjoy, but also helps boost our visibility to others who might benefit from our content. Remember, your ratings, comments, and shares are vital in spreading the word about the business of dairy. Together, we can ensure that more people have access to the valuable insights and knowledge shared on our podcast. I sincerely thank you for being part of our community, and we look forward to bringing you more engaging episodes in the future with the continued funding and support of the Hunter Local Land Services. Until next time, stay curious and keep milking those opportunities.